This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters now. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Welcome, everybody. Great to have you with us again. I am really privileged today to be able to visit again with a wonderful Christian whom I've really grown to admire the more I get to know her. Laura Perry is a former transgender, and she has told her story before, both on this show and also during our God's Voice conference earlier this year. And now I'm really excited. Laura has put out a book. It's called Transgender to Transformed, a story of transition that will truly set you free. And we're going to touch on not only the Lord's work in her own life, but also her perspective on how to reach out to those you might encounter who are dealing with this issue of gender dysphoria. Laura, it is just my privilege to have you back. How are you doing? Great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back. I'm doing really well. The Lord has just continued to bless my life.
Oh, I'm so excited about your book, and I hope everybody will read this because your story probably is one of the greatest testimonies I've ever heard, and I bet you hear that a lot, don't you?
I do, yeah, and it amazes me, not just being transgender, and I honestly never, ever, ever thought I would leave the lifestyle, but also just, you know, I was bound and determined not to be a Christian.
Yes.
I just hated God.
Yes. Yeah, it's incredible what the Lord has done in your life, and I know we've done a show before where you've told your entire testimony, but for listeners who missed our last interview, I wonder if you could just do a very brief recap of how it was that you left transgenderism and became a Christian.
Sure. I had grown up most of my life believing that I was supposed to be a boy. I tried to act like boys. There was a lot of jealousy of my brother. So there were various things in childhood that had played into that, but I didn't really understand that. By the time I made the decision to be transgender, all I knew was that I felt this way and I had to be a man and was really convinced I was a man trapped in a woman's body and began to take the hormones and grow the facial hair. My voice began to get lower. It was even lower then than it is now, I think. And and then I eventually had two major surgeries. I had both breasts removed. I even had a chest reconstruction to look more like a male chest. It was formed that way. And then also had all the female organs removed. And so I was very serious about it and very determined and never thought I would go back. But I really found it to be completely empty. It wasn't what it was promised to be. And I was really angry when I realized that transition wasn't possible. And as much as I wanted to be a man, that I really was a woman, and I just couldn't face it. But then my mom, who I'd been angry with my mom for a lot of my life and really wanted nothing to do with her, but she had asked me to make a website for her Bible study. And as I began to read her notes, because I was honestly just going to make a summary of each lesson for her. She hadn't even asked me to do that, but I thought it would be a good idea. And as I did, I began to read the notes, and the Word of God just began to penetrate my heart. And I'll never forget, I think what really changed me was for the first time in my life, I saw God's Word not just as a rule book, but all of a sudden I was beginning to see the heart and the character of God. And it just totally changed my perspective on God. And then as I started calling her and asking her questions, and for about 6 months we talked almost every single day, and as we did, I realized that my mom had completely changed, and she had been totally transformed. And when I recognized that, it was at that moment that I knew the gospel was true. And not just intellectually true, but all of a sudden it was real, and I could see God completely transform her. And that's when I gave my life to Christ. And, you know, I thought I was going to be a man of God. And I thought, this is awesome, you know, and I'm just going to be this great man of God. But, you know, God, he was patient with me, but he didn't leave me there. And he began to convict me. And he drew me out of it. And I think ultimately, I heard the truth more and more. I was more convicted all the time. And then finally, I felt like I'd fallen into a deep, dark pit that I couldn't get out of. And I'll never forget, I cried out to the Lord and asked him to just take my life. I said, just let me die because I cannot fix this. I didn't know how to get out of it. And he finally reached his hand down into this pit I was in, and I had this vision of Jesus. And he said, do you trust me? And so that's when he basically asked me to leave it and to just walk by faith. And he promised me that he would heal me. But I had to walk by faith. And yeah. I was, but now I've been totally delivered and set free, and it's just been incredible to watch the transformation over the last 3 years.
Boy, it really has been. And by the way, I have to put in a plug because you, Laura, and your mom did a fantastic testimony together at our God's Voice conference. And if you want to watch that video, and you should watch that video and send it to everybody you know, you can go to godsvoice.us and you can view that video. It's well worth your time. What an incredible time that was. We were all bawling at the end of that testimony between you and your mom. That was just such a wonderful work of the Lord. You know, it's interesting. I think many people have questions about what it's like to live that way. Here you were a girl, you made these transitions to try to become a boy, you lived your life as a boy, you really wanted to be physically a boy. Did you have any doubts, Laura, when you were going through this, like maybe I shouldn't be doing this, maybe I can't really pull this off, or were you just completely confident that what you desired to become was possible?
Yeah, it was weird because at first I really believed it was possible. And at first when everybody knew that I was transgender, I really wasn't all that worried about it because it was like, one day this will be real. And so now I know there's going to be a couple of awkward years in between, and that's okay. So I wasn't that worried about it, and it was fun. It's kind of like being at an amusement park. While you're there and you're riding all these rides, it's, you know, so much fun, and there, everything's new and exciting and all these thrills, and there's all these changes. But when the ride stopped and it's time to go home and you're just back to life, I remember feeling devastated that, wait a minute, this was, you know, it wasn't real. And I'll never forget, I got really angry actually when I looked at the, I started looking into the genital reassignment surgeries because that had always been a part of the plan. I just assumed that I would and I would be fully male. And I remember looking and thinking, I was very angry that no one had told me how horrible these surgeries were. First of all, that they're never real, that they will, most of the time they say the girls will never have any sexual sensation. A lot of times they, it just will destroy your sex life. I don't want to get too graphic, but they say, in fact, there's an inside source I have. This hadn't even been released publicly, but I know a guy that knows this, that there's a girl that's had 31 corrective surgeries.
Ooh.
Because it is so bad. And so I was really angry when I found out that not only was the surgery out of my reach financially, it would have cost me about $100,000. It would have been a series of 3 surgeries, but the results are horrible, and it would have left me with horrible scarring. And so that's when I really realized, but even if I had, I realized that this was all fake. Everything I was doing wasn't real, and it was never going to be real no matter what I did. And it didn't dawn on me that the hormones never change the DNA of your body. And sure, your cell, you have 37 or so or whatever it is, a trillion cells in your body, and every one of them records your sex chromosomes.
Wow.
Your body's screaming at you over and over and over that you are male or female.
Wow. Did you have moments where your femaleness kicked in, you know, just so broadly that you couldn't deny it, say, boy, I'm still acting like a girl. I mean, I've had these surgeries, but I'm still kind of acting female here.
Yeah, it's funny. I noticed it more in my partner, though. This was the funny thing. I was dating a guy that was a male to female transgender, and I used to get so frustrated because I could see in him the truth I couldn't see in myself. And it drove me crazy because I kept thinking, no matter what he's doing, all the hormones he's taking, and he's wearing the wig, and he's, you know, wearing these female clothes, and no matter what he's doing, he is such a man. And he was just wired that way. And I began to see it later in myself, and sometimes I would have these moments of being reminded of it. I remember one in particular. I was standing in this group of guys years into my transition. I was at a job where I was only known as male. No one knew I was transgender. And I'm just standing in this group of only guys, and there was something intangible that I couldn't even put my finger on. I just knew I was different. And I thought, I just don't think like them.
Right.
And it was something that I really couldn't even define, but I was like, there is a clear difference here between the sexes. That's when it really dawned on me.
That's interesting. And that's exactly what I was wondering, if you had those sorts of moments where, I think every girl can talk about that, being around guys and going, boy, you guys are just not like me.
Right.
You just don't get it. You don't get what we're made of as women. And that's what's so interesting and fascinating. We're going to take a short break. Laura Perry coming back. The book is called Transgender to Transformed. We'll come back on Janet Meffer Today after this. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
From Affirm Films, Provident Films, and the Kendrick Brothers comes Overcomer. John Harrison is a frustrated coach questioning his value until he crosses paths with a student struggling on her own journey.
What have you allowed to define you? When you find your identity in the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective. You say I am
loved. Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shirer. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Now play. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
If you're a medical professional, here's a way to move from success to even greater significance. Mercy Ships has an urgent need for pediatric registered nurses. You'll be joining dozens of volunteer medical professionals who've been blessed by the opportunity.
I think all nurses should do something like this. To serve the unserved is one of the most beautiful experiences.
Get more information by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. Mercy Ships, bringing hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor.
Welcome back to Janet Meffer today. It is a delight for me to welcome back to the program Laura Perry. Her great book, Transgender to Transformed, is a story of transition that will truly set you free. Hers is a work of grace at the hands of Jesus Christ. Unlike a testimony I've ever heard before, she is amazing. She was struggling with transgenderism, and as she's been telling her story and her testimony, she thought she was male. She went through the surgeries, and then the Lord set her free, and it's just an incredible story. Laura, we were talking a little bit about the fact that you could not at certain junctures deny that you were female, and you noticed in the person you were dating who was a male to female transgender that at times you would think he's such a man, you know, and these sorts of things are undeniable. What I'm curious about is, what is the reality of the transgender experience? Because what is really coming across all the time across the transom is the media is always hyping, oh, he's really a woman trapped in a male body, and this is what he says. And they always put forward a story that it's absolutely clear I'm in the wrong body. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not thinking in any kind of a crazy way. Society is my problem. The reason I feel so depressed is because of society, and society is not accepting me in my identity. What is your reaction to those narratives?
Well, and that's what I really believed at the time. But I've learned now, having come out of it, that not only did I have deep issues from childhood, but everyone I've ever known that has lived in this transgender lifestyle did as well. I think it may be changing a little now just because this is being pushed on children that don't even understand sex or gender yet.
Right.
But to those that have really struggled with this, every single one that I have ever known has been sexually abused in some way. Sometimes it's exposure to pornography. Sometimes it's being molested, being raped. And, of course, that's not to say it's 100% of cases, but it's, I think, everyone that I know. And then also, the other common thing that I see is a deep issue with one of the parents. Again, I know I didn't get into it too much on this program, but I did in the book about I had a really rough relationship with my mom growing up, and I'd kind of rejected women entirely over the years.
Yeah.
And so I had this deep hatred of women. But I didn't really even realize until you asked a little bit about the experience going through this. I really believed when I first started transition that this would all be possible, but it was actually, and I kept thinking I would one day find this freedom. One day I would truly be comfortable in this. One day this is all going to be real. But actually it was the opposite. And as the more I transitioned, the more I was affirmed, the more that I was really perceived to be male, the more of a living hell it became. And it really became my prison because I was so bound to this identity. And I began to be more and more afraid because, for example, once I was, once it wasn't obvious that I was transgender and I was just perceived as male, I was going into these male restrooms, and then I had this thought, well, what if somebody finds out? And then I was really scared because I knew that I'd either be beat up or raped or who knows, you know. And so there was a lot of fear there. Or even, like, this is a one of my biggest regrets. I was working at a middle school, and some of the kids had figured out that I was transgender. I've noticed that kids are more perceptive, especially if they're not taught this this narrative like they are being now. But they were more perceptive than the adults. So the adults really thought that I was a man, but some of the kids had figured it out. And the principal asked me to go into the bathroom one day and get these three boys that were goofing off. And I was really conflicted because I didn't want the principal to know, but these boys had confronted me like a day or two before and asked about it. And so I walked in to this boy's bathroom, and all three were standing at the urinal, and I'll never, ever forget the look on their face. You could see that they felt violated, and they started yelling at me to get out, and they turned and covered themselves, you know, and it was just,
wow. It
was a humiliating moment, and I realized I didn't belong in there.
Yeah.
I had violated these young men.
You know, that's interesting because whenever we talk about these bathroom policies, we always think of the girls and the girls' reaction when a man will walk in claiming to be a woman, but it's interesting that that also does happen with boys, which makes total sense.
It does, yeah, and it's a violation of their privacy, and it exposes them to something they shouldn't be exposed to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we're always, you know, even the church in trying to deal with this is always looking at it from this one poor soul who wants to do this and believes this, but we're not thinking about, like, we had a guy recently in our church that wanted to use our women's restrooms, and I'm like, what about these little preschool and kindergarten girls
yes.
going in here?
Right.
I'm sorry, I don't
right.
want them exposed to this.
Right. That's exactly, and you know whereof you speak, Laura. You have incredible credibility on this
right.
issue. You know, I'm also curious, did anybody ever try to stop you when you were trying to go through this transition to become male? Did you have any health professionals say to you, maybe you need to go through counseling and make sure that you are not dealing with some deeper issue? Because one of the things I've heard from some of these people who have detransitioned is the fact that the medical health profession is just all in on this, and they don't try to stop you. Was that your experience?
Well, that's the really sad part, I think, because it was a legal requirement at the time for me to go into counseling. Otherwise, I'd have never gone. I didn't have any interest in it. And so I had to have a minimum of three sessions, and I'm just kind of mindlessly answering her questions. And all of a sudden, one day, she put down her notebook and looked right in my eyes and said, wow, you really have issues with your mom. And I was stunned. I was like, how did we get from talking about me wanting to be a man to talking about my mom? And I blew up at her, and I was like, I'm not here to talk about my mom. And she said, so all you want is for me to give you the hormones. Or she would give me a letter, rather, to give to my doctor. And I said, yes, that's all I'm here for. And she said, okay. And she just gave it to me. Rather than pressing in, she had made the connection. You know, why did she not push me on that and say at the very least, okay, let's have a couple more sessions. Let's see if this really is an issue.
Yeah.
This would help you.
Yeah.
But no, she just gave in and gave me what I wanted.
Wow.
I mean, you wouldn't do that in any other kind of mental disorder.
No, you wouldn't.
You know, you would help the person.
Boy, so for people listening who might know somebody who's going through this sort of scenario, what can you do to help? I mean, even if you're not a mental health professional, you're just a concerned friend or family member, what can you do? Clearly pray for the person, but what
yeah.
sorts of tips would you give to Christians listening to say, handle the person this way, speak about these things, go in this direction?
I think, and you touched on it, the number one thing is prayer. This really, it is, when people begin to believe this, it's so deep-seated into their psyche, and they really begin to believe it's who they are. A lot of times they've been abused. But also, I think a great way to approach it is to begin to ask questions, see if you can reconnect. Because I wish she had pushed me more on where my issues were with my mom, because she wasn't to blame. I don't blame my mother, but that's where this seed started very, very early in life. And for these kids that have been abused, they need to recognize that connection. See if you can, and a lot of times if you ask them, like, you know, when did these feelings start? Most of them will tell you they've always felt that way. Well, don't let them get away with that because, you know, no 1 or 2 year old understands what sex is or what gender is or any of that.
Right.
So, you know, no, okay, think about it. When do you remember first really feeling this way? And then see why they begin to feel that way. A lot of them can tell you. And sometimes it may be just misunderstanding. I'll never forget, I found a video one day of a little boy that's being medically transitioned, and his reasons for wanting to be a girl, he said, well, I really like the color pink, and I like the way girls wear their hair, and I like their pretty clothes, and that was his reasons. And so his parents are like, no, he's really a girl.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
And it's just, it's so maddening.
Yeah.
And these, you know, these little boys that want to be drag queens, at least 2 of them that I've heard, their mothers were watching RuPaul's Drag Race, talking about
my
how amazing these drag queens
word,
were.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as it becomes popularized in the culture, the mom wants to be cool and, you know, oh, yeah, let's affirm him and his non-sex and let's take him to the drag queen story hour. And I mean, how do you feel about these kids being exposed to this stuff at such a young age?
I think I am grieved. I can't even describe. You know, these kids being exposed to this are going to be so confused. They're like awash at sea. Like they can't even figure out who they are. They have no grounding if we don't tell them. And they're being groomed for to be molested. Honestly, for pedophilia, because these there was a drag queen story hour recently that a friend got some undercover video on. And they were reading a story called What Color Is Your Underwear? And it was one of these books where it has, you remember the old books where they would have this little flap that you could pull up and it would reveal something underneath?
Yeah.
Well, imagine, what color is your underwear? So they're pulling up this flap and it's revealing what color underwear. And then this last one, it says, oh, he's not wearing any underwear.
Are you kidding me? That's horrible.
No, and that's, parents have really got to wake up to what's going on. This is not some new wonderful thing. Their kids are being groomed. And, so we absolutely want to help people that are struggling with it, but we've also got to wake up to what's going on. And we've got to teach our children that God really did make the sexes. He made them differently. He did make them binary. There is a male and a female.
Yes.
You know, and he really did make them different. And the sexes, when you really begin to understand God's creation, put the gospel on display. We're to represent Christ and the church.
That's right. That's right.
I think it's a beautiful thing when you, just a book I personally recommend for anybody that's wanting to understand at least women is a book called Divine Design, True Woman 101 by Nancy Liedemoss at the time and Mary Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing book on just understanding how God made women.
Well, that's wonderful. I really appreciate what you're saying here, Laura. And I think one of the greatest things in all of this is how the Lord has clearly healed you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible. And it gives people hope, I'm sure, if they are struggling with the same issue in gender dysphoria and maybe some deep-seated issues like you're talking about with sexual abuse or a difficult relationship with maybe mom or maybe dad, that Jesus Christ loves you, that he really will heal you. And Laura, your story is proof positive that it's absolutely true. And that's why people need to pick up your book. It is called Transgender to Transformed, a story of transition that will truly set you free. Laura Perry joining us. Laura, thank you so much for your testimony, for your great book, and for being with us again. It was wonderful to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure.
All right. God bless you. Laura Perry, thanks again. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today right after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters now. More information is available at overcomermovie.com. Welcome Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. Well, you have no doubt noticed that healthcare spending is out of control. As Reason.com recently put it, the crux of the problem is third-party payment, or as most people think of it, insurance. Health insurance insulates patients from individual decisions about price and service quality. Those decisions become invisible, outsourced to a middleman, while the patient whose health is at stake is removed from the equation. Is there a way, though, to put the patient back into the driver's seat when it comes to healthcare? We're going to get some thoughts on that now from Matt Bellis, Chief Communications Officer for Liberty HealthShare, a national nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry. Matt, great to have you with us again. How are you?
Thanks, Janet, for having me. I always love being here.
Well, we love having you here. This is very interesting. I think this is kind of a very obvious thing to say that healthcare spending is out of control, but it's interesting that they cite the third-party payment as the real problem. You have often said the same thing.
Well, it is a part of a large puzzle piece.
Yes.
Because healthcare has become rather untenable in terms of the cost of it. And third party does play a large portion of that, primarily because it removes the end user, the patient, from the actual cost of healthcare. If we lived our lives in a place where we're insulated from the actual cost of goods and services, those things would actually rise in prices. You don't go and buy food insurance. You don't go and buy sneaker insurance. You know, all of these things that you're trying to purchase on a regular basis, you don't buy insurances for those things.
Right.
And that's in large part due to the system that we have been grown up in. Frankly, it goes all the way back until World War II. But we have been raised in a system here that has said the only way to pay for high dollar health care is through insurance. And the regulations, the licensing, all of the individual parties that play a part within that marketplace have had some share of the blame in this, but a large portion of that does go to that third-party payment system.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. How frustrated have you heard people say they are with the current situation with health insurance? It seems there's no shortage of people who are really frustrated, but what are you hearing from Liberty HealthShare consumers?
Well, it's really an understanding, frankly. We have wise consumers out there, people who really understand what the crux of the problem is, and people understand that it's not just insurance, even though their healthcare bills have gone up over the past few years. It really is the amalgamation of all of the individual processes that have come up to make this happen. Government has a share of the blame. Hospitals and how they price things. All of these things have worked to a system that has driven up the cost. And so our members who are coming to us are thankful for it, but they understand that what they were paying for and what they were a part of is only really just a portion of where the problem is. And so if you're recognizing that there is blame to go around, you have to start realizing that it takes a complete reset of how you even approach healthcare and how to pay for it.
Yeah, now that's a really good point, because when we're talking about healthcare sharing, this is a completely different system that I know many people who have been used to health insurance might not be familiar with. Explain for listeners how it all works, what medical cost sharing is all about, and how the members interact. What makes it different from this third-party payer healthcare insurance system that so many of us are used to?
Well, I like to say pretty much two things really separate why healthcare sharing is not insurance, because insurance does a couple of things that we don't do. Number one is they spread risk. The whole concept that your broken arm is that price is spread out amongst so many people is an idea of how to approach high cost. But the whole concept of spreading risk is not something that we do. We actually each individually take responsibility for our own risk. We are all each individual self-pay patients who are fully responsible for our own healthcare bills. That gives us a certain amount of freedom and choice you really don't find anywhere else. you're able to direct your health care because you're the one holding the purse strings.
Right.
The doctor's talking to you, not some bureaucrat miles away, about your health care. You're the one making the decisions in consultation with your doctor to what works best for you. Now, people often say, okay, great, if I'm responsible for my own health care, that gives me freedom. But what happens inevitably if I get sick or I'm in an accident? That's why insurance exists, correct?
Yes.
Well, that brings me to the second reason why we're not health insurance. We don't pool our funds. We don't put our money into a big, giant, bureaucratic black hole, and then hopefully someday we'll be able to extract some of it whenever we have a need. This is member-to-member, person-to-person cost sharing. It's not Liberty HealthShare who is paying for your bills. It's Janet. It's Matt.
Yes.
It's individuals contributing to each other's healthcare bills. So that's what we do. Even though we are each individually responsible for our healthcare, we have a community of people behind us to help support us during those times that are unexpected and unaffordable. It's what you, frankly, would normally do if you came into a situation that was unexpected and unaffordable. It would be your family, your friends, your community, your neighbors, your church that you would turn to and say, help, I have something wrong here. I need some help. We've taken that whole model and systematized it, made it more effective, efficient, put processes around it to make it worth somebody investing in. And so our members are a part of a community that are supporting one another, all the while maintaining their independence and their control over their own health care.
Very well said, Matt. And so the upshot is when you are part of Liberty HealthShare, you are also saving money, aren't you? This is one of the main things that you hear.
Well, and that's an important aspect to this, because why would you do it if it just costs the same amount of money?
Right.
What we have found is that if you hold to certain truths, there are going to be ancillary benefits that come along. Certain truths like you should be the one calling the shots for your health care. It's a good thing to share in a community, one and amongst each other, bearing one another's burdens. You should be able to direct and manage the cost of your health, all the while being supported by a network of your friends. Those are the good things that you should be doing. And what we have found, because our members are on the front lines of healthcare, they're the ones that's first watching the cost of healthcare.
Yes.
So they're asking for, what's the cash price of it? Is this the best time to do this procedure? Where do I go for the best hospital care at the lowest price? Should we go to a surgery center rather than an emergency room? You know, all of those things that add up to somebody controlling their health care is what we have unleashed. And it is probably the single most profound use of a secret weapon, and that's the individual self-pay patient. That person is the linchpin when it comes to containing the cost of high-cost health care.
Well, that's excellent.
The second part of that is everybody on the back end at Liberty HealthShare watching over the members, making sure things aren't being paid too much, making sure that there's no fraud or anything like that. With Liberty HealthShare and our members on the forefront, that's how we attack high-cost health care. And we benefit from that because we're doing the right thing.
Well, that's wonderful. And as we have said before, Matt, one of the greatest benefits, in addition to what you have said, which is so important, is the fact that you are not going to have to compromise your conscience in order to be part of Liberty HealthShare. And I know a lot of people are very appreciative of that as well, that they can maintain their Christian ethics and Christian conscience and feel good about being a part of what you guys are offering.
I'm so glad that we're a part of a system where our money is not being co-opted, utilized, subverted without my knowledge to go to pay for things that would go against my conscience.
Yep, me too.
I doubt that there would be very many people in your audience who would willingly contribute to an abortion, abortive fashion, sex change operation.
That's it. Matt, we got to run, but libertyhealthshare.org is the website. Matt Bellis, thanks a lot for being with us, and we'll be back on Janet Mefford Today.
From Affirm Films, Provident Films, and the Kindred Brothers comes Overcomer.
John Harrison is a frustrated coach questioning his value until he crosses paths with a student struggling on her own journey.
What have you allowed to define you? When you find your identity and the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective. You
Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shirer. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Now play. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
If you're looking for adventure, serving as a volunteer on the Mercy Ship is an adventure like no other. And you'll be serving on the largest non-governmental hospital ship in the world, providing free care to some of the world's poorest people. Whether it's performing a surgery, cleaning the deck, or transporting a patient to a recovery center, every day you'll be making a difference in the lives of struggling people. Begin your adventure today. Connect with us at mercyships.org. It's an adventure of a lifetime.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be 3. I don't know where my life would be without her.
The Ministry of Preborn invites you to share your pro-life message through Sharing Heartbeats. You see, when a young woman considering abortion sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, 8 out of 10 times, she'll choose life for her preborn baby.
That ultrasound changed everything for me. It really did. That made it all worthwhile to know that I was going to have a little blessing. And when she got here, it was just, oh my gosh.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Would you join with Preborn and Janet Meffer today? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies' lives. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation goes toward saving babies' lives. Call now, 855-402-2229, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. Does Title VII prohibit discrimination against transgenders based on their status as transgender or based on sex stereotyping? That is a critical question. 2 questions, actually, in the case involving RG and GR Harris Funeral Homes, which is set to go before the Supreme Court. At issue is whether or not the funeral home was discriminating against a male employee when it told him that he could not start dressing as a woman at work. An Alliance Defending Freedom, which is representing the funeral home, has now filed a brief asking the court to affirm that neither a court nor a government agency can do an end run around the role of Congress by redefining the word sex in federal law to mean gender identity. We're going to hear more about this important case now from Kate Anderson, senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom. Kate, it's great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. Well, tell us about the latest development. You guys have now filed this brief. This case has been ongoing. This is going to be a very important case before the Supreme Court. Tell us about this latest move and why it was necessary.
Well, we filed our brief last week with the Supreme Court, as you said, asking the court to confirm the meaning of sex in federal law. It means biological sex, and Americans should be able to rely on that. But the ACLU on the other side is trying to convince the court to bypass Congress and to redefine sex in federal employment law to include gender identity, even though that will have significant consequences both for businesses and for the equal opportunities for women.
Right. Now, how would this affect things if they don't affirm federal law as written? What sorts of consequences could there be for the rest of society?
Well, it would hurt the privacy and safety issues for women. There would be no sex-specific restroom. We're seeing as this would move into other laws, women would lose equal opportunities in athletics, which is something that we're already seeing happen across the country, and particularly in Connecticut, yes, as well as women would be forced to share private spaces with men, and employers would be required to allow that as they try to navigate how to deal with their policies based around a fluid, dynamic, ever-changing concept of gender identity.
Yeah. Oh, it's very disturbing to think about what could happen if this does not go the right way. But let's go back to the case itself for those listeners who aren't familiar with what happened with this funeral home. I mentioned before that there was this funeral director, Anthony Stevens, and he was hired and then he wanted to dress as a woman. What exactly went down at the beginning of this entire incident?
Well, Harris Funeral Home is a fifth-generation business that has been serving grieving families in Detroit for over 100 years. They hired a male funeral director, Stevens, in 2007, and Stevens worked for them for nearly 6 years at which time he came to the owner and indicated that he wanted to start dressing and planned to start dressing as a woman at work while he worked with the grieving family's Harris Funeral Home, as probably all funeral homes, have a sex-specific dress code that is there to promote formality and professionalism and to make sure that families can focus on their grieving process rather than anything going on at the funeral home. And so Tom Ross, the owner, talked to Stevens, concluded that he needed him to abide by that dress code at work, and then that didn't work, and they ended up parting ways.
Right. Then the EEOC ended up suing, right?
Yes. Stevens filed a complaint with the EEOC, and the government initially pursued this to push an agenda to change the meaning of sex in federal law to mean gender identity. And since then, the government has actually changed its position and now agrees with the funeral home that sex means biological sex. But the ACLU has taken up the case and is continuing to push for this change in the law, bypassing Congress and getting the courts to just read gender identity into existing law.
Well, what's interesting, and I know a lot of it has to do with the timing, the change in administration and so forth, but under the Obama administration was when this started being interpreted by bureaucrats as meaning gender identity, even though that was not what Title VII said at all, and that wasn't the intent of Title VII. But now that the federal government has agreed under the Trump administration that Tom's decision to decline Stevens' demand was not sex discrimination, what leg does the ACLU have to stand on? Even their own federal government doesn't agree anymore.
Well, the ACLU is just pushing the same arguments forward that were earlier brought by the government, arguing that when the term sex is used in Title IX, that it can include gender identity. But that question will be for the court. And there, the court looks at what was the public understanding of that term when the law was passed. And we interpret laws that way because it ensures that they maintain stable and consistent over time so that Americans can rely on those laws as they are written. This particular law was passed in 1964, and I don't think anyone really argues that in 1964 people thought that sex included other concepts like gender identity.
Yeah, men dressing as women at funeral homes. I don't think that was really a big issue in 1964. It's kind of interesting, though, because as you've seen this issue come down the pike more and more and more, how does it intersect with the issue of bureaucrats interpreting federal law for certain purposes in other areas? For example, what are the boundaries, I guess I would ask, on bureaucrats being able to interpret federal law without the intervention of Congress? Because obviously there's tons of federal law and tons of decisions that have to be made within the confines of government on any given day. How do you kind of unwind that and say, in this instance, it's pretty clear Congress has to play that role?
Yeah, well, certainly agencies as well as courts have to interpret laws, but they interpret them based on the understanding of what those terms meant in their plain meaning at the time that those laws are passed. They don't actually recreate laws or change them in a way that is going to effectively make a new law. And that's really the job of Congress. And the reason that's there is because Congress is best equipped to deal with the various competing interests on any law. So when you're looking at a significant change like this, something that's going to impact women's equal opportunities, Title VII developed to protect women in employment, and other similar laws have developed to protect women's private spaces, to protect women in education and scholarship opportunities. And so when you have a change in the law that's going to impact so many people in society, that really is something Congress has to look at and decide whether they want to make that kind of a change. And so far, Congress has not wanted to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Here's something else that kind of struck me when you were talking about this case, and it's the fact that when we're talking about, and this has come up in other discussions I know about what it means to really be a woman, that it's not just a matter of putting on a wig and some lipstick. But for example, when you have a restaurant, I've been to many restaurants before where there is one dress code and the women are all wearing what you could call men's clothing. They're all wearing, you know, button-down shirts with a black vest and black pants, for example. And they didn't have to wear skirts in order to understand that they were women. In other words, what are the boundaries on what you can wear and what is even deemed men's clothing versus women's clothing? If a woman has to wear pants in her job, does that now count as sex discrimination if this Anthony Stevens makes this claim? I mean, who decides what is female clothing if he was made to wear pants in his job as a funeral director? Who's to say that was sex discrimination if other women have to wear pants for their job?
Well, I think you're getting right to the heart of the sex stereotyping issue. Federal law has recognized the concept that if a person or if an employer uses a sex stereotype to discriminate against a woman, for example, by punishing her for being too aggressive because he thinks that men should be aggressive and women shouldn't, that violates Title VII. But when you get to issues like dress code, it's sort of anyone's guess on what would be considered a stereotype, and that's why it's so hard for employers. In the dress code context, the EEOC actually has regulations that allow employers to make reasonable dress codes. They can make them sex-specific. They can make them all the same. But it just can't be more burdensome to one sex or the other. And so that's usually how we navigate the dress code issue.
That's interesting. So where do things go from here? What's going to happen next with this brief that you filed and with the Supreme Court taking up the case?
Well, the arguments in this case will be heard on October 8th. And so between now and then, I'm sure the court has much to think about and read, but we'll be preparing for that argument.
Very good. So right around the corner. But this is, I don't know, I'm not the Supreme Court, clearly, but I'm looking at this case and it looks pretty clear to me. I don't know how in the world the ACLU would prevail, but I don't want to jinx it, obviously. You never know what will go on. But it sounds like you have a pretty strong case here on behalf of this funeral home.
Well, we hope you're right, but we do feel pretty confident that when you look at what the public meaning of sex was in 1964, that it absolutely was biological sex.
Very good. Well, October 8th, the arguments will be heard, so we'll see how things go from there. Kate Anderson from Alliance Defending Freedom. Kate, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll keep a close eye on this case. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Janet Mefford today. It's a blessing to have you with us each day, and we appreciate your being with us every day. We'll see you next time.